My first year of learning Chinese was spent in an intensive but conventional university environment. While I learned a lot, many things were also left out. Hello and welcome to the Hacking Chinese podcast. In this week's episode, I'm going to share with you the second part of the story of how I learned Chinese. And if you want to check out the first part, that was episode 128, where I talked about why I started learning Chinese in the first place. Before I continue that story though, I'd like to announce that there is a writing challenge on for February. And like all other challenges, it starts on the 10th and then lasts until the end of the month. The goal here is to encourage you to write more and hopefully also get some feedback on the things that you write, because that's a great way of improving. So if you're interested in that, head over to challenges.hackingchinese.com or check the link in the description. And as usual, if you listen to this in the future, you can still head over to Hacking Chinese Challenges to see what challenge is on when you are listening. So let's get into the topic of this episode, namely my first year of learning Chinese. And this was back in 2007, so well before Hacking Chinese was launched, obviously, and well before I knew that this was something I would spend a lot of time on. And I think this is important to keep in mind. I did not know the best ways of learning Mandarin 15 years ago. I did not know exactly what I would use Mandarin for either, so I simply mostly followed along in the program I was in. Now, luckily, this program was fairly intensive and I learned an awful lot. I'll get back to that later in this episode. But unfortunately, there are also certain things that simply aren't taught very well at universities. And this can lead to a situation where you can nail exams and get very good grades without actually being very good at Chinese. And this is similar to what we talked about in episode 129, when we talked about how to use HSK as a roadmap to learning Chinese. And we saw then that there are many things left out that you actually need to be good at using Chinese in real-world situations that simply aren't on the test. And that means you can get very good grades on the exam and still be quite bad at using Chinese in a communicative context. So the main problem here is the curriculum and how students are tested. That means that some things are very important if you want to pass exams and get good grades, whereas other things might be important if you want to be able to use Chinese well. And ideally, these should of course be the same, but this simply isn't the case in, like I said, most university courses. For example, there is a strong tendency to favor the written language. So you need to read, you need to write, you need to know the vocabulary, and you need to know the grammar. And depending on how this is tested, you can actually know these in isolation without being very good at implementing them or using them in, say, your own production. So your own speaking and writing, that is. There are many university programs where there are only written exams, for example, and then this should obviously be a problem. It ignores half the language. So in this sense, I don't think the program that I studied in was particularly good. That means that we were actually tested on speaking a little bit and there were some productive elements we needed to be able to do, but there wasn't really that much emphasis on communication for the exams themselves. So that means that if you knew all the texts, you knew all the grammar and all the words, all the characters and so on, you'd probably get a pretty good grade. And I'm a very good example here because I mostly did what I was supposed to do. If there was homework, I did that. If there was a test, I prepared. I learned everything in the textbook and so on, and I did very well on the exams. But after 1 year, when I went to Taiwan to study in an immersion environment, I really couldn't use Chinese that much. There were lots of things I could understand, but as soon as I opened my mouth and tried to say something, it took way too long to recall the right words. I didn't have the sentence patterns in place firmly enough to be able to communicate well. Everything was too slow. Another way of putting this is to say that I had no fluency, and this is something we talked about in episode 99. And the things we talked about there, how to get better at what you already know, was something we didn't do much at all. And I think that was one of the biggest problems. We did go through a textbook, I will talk about that in a second, And we kept piling up vocabulary, grammar patterns, and so on. And of course, I made sure that I knew these well enough to recall them on an exam. Otherwise, I wouldn't have passed the courses and I wouldn't have gotten good grades. But I didn't know them enough to use them in real communication. And that was the big problem. We didn't do nearly enough exercises with real communicative aspects, because then I would have figured this out much earlier and I would have realized that I should spend much more time on fluency development instead of just trying to learn more and more words. So let's back up a bit and talk a little bit about what I did during my first year. And we used a textbook, like I said. We used one called 汉语口语速成, or Short-Term Spoken Chinese. This is a textbook series that's meant to be used in an immersion environment, so it's basically support for the teacher, and the teacher goes through this with the students. There isn't much in terms of explanations for students or extra reading and things like that, because you're supposed to do that in class with a teacher. So if you compare with something like Integrated Chinese, these books don't really have anything in terms of telling the students directly how to do things, how things work, and so on. And some of the explanations are actually only in Chinese. I wouldn't recommend anybody to use this book, to be honest. It is not very good and it's also a bit outdated, especially now. Using this series of books also resulted in a lot of extra work and time being wasted on things that had nothing to do with learning Chinese, or that didn't contribute to our learning in general, I mean. For example, in the third book in this series, there are lots of example sentences for grammar patterns and for new vocabulary, which is good, but these sentences were horrible. They did include lots of language that was not covered in the chapter and was not covered in any previous chapter either, and they didn't have pinyin. And this doesn't sound so bad these days. You just pick up your phone, you use the camera, you scan, you use OCR, and you have the characters, if there were any characters you didn't know. But back in 2007, there were hardly smartphones, and there certainly wasn't any Chinese OCR. This meant that every single word that was unknown took minutes to look up. So I think we spent something like an hour per chapter just figuring out what the example sentences meant and how the characters were pronounced. And this, of course, should never happen. Also, as if this weren't enough, the words that we looked at were also quite useless in many cases. They were not high-frequency words we really needed to learn. So stay away from that textbook series if you considered using it. Beyond working our way through the first three textbooks in this series, and then some, we also did other things. This program is meant to prepare engineering students for studying Chinese and engineering in parallel, and then in a few years go to China to study these subjects in situ. This means that we also learned a lot of technical language. We learned basic mathematics, chemistry, biology, physics, and so on. And some of this was very useful. For example, learning basic mathematics in Chinese is not very hard, and some things maybe weren't that important. But on the other hand, the goal here really wasn't to learn and remember how to say lactic acid or something in Chinese. It was to be able to deal with these kinds of text with dictionaries and so on, so that you can cope better when you actually need to use these texts in real life. There was a certain advantage with having such a clear goal for the course, i.e. preparing you to go to China in a few years to study engineering courses in Chinese, and that is that the pace was very high. I should also mention that we didn't only study Chinese language, we also had courses in history and culture, society, economics, and so on, and not just for China, but for East Asia in general. So to summarize, I learned a lot of things during my first year, and this proved to be a very good foundation to build upon later. It wasn't very good in the sense that it wasn't immediately useful for using Chinese to speak with real people, but as soon as I started doing that in my second year, I learned very quickly. And that is, of course, because I already had the vocabulary, and that made learning everything else very easy. So how much Chinese did I learn during my first year? I can't actually give you an answer to that because I started keeping fairly detailed logs of my learning after I moved to Taiwan, which was after more or less exactly a year. So let's have a look at that first language report. Remember that this was written after I arrived in Taiwan, but we can use it as a way to see what I learned and maybe more importantly, what I didn't learn during my first year. So the report is divided into the four skills, very conventional. And I'm just going to read the report here, it's pretty short. Speaking. People seem to be able to understand most of what I say, and though my vocabulary is poor, I can convey basic concepts, ask questions, and so forth. Speaking does not feel like a problem compared to the other areas. Listening. I can hear an occasional word or phrase or understand how much things cost, but most of the time when natives talk to me, I am completely clueless. Listening is the problem at the moment. Practice, 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 and perhaps in time I will get it. Writing. Traditional characters are really difficult, but I have come some way towards learning to write the characters I knew before. I have revised 15 out of 60 chapters, so I can write some of the characters and recognize most. Reading. Again, because of the traditional characters, I understand parts of signs and headlines, but seldom entire sentences. It is said that you need around 2,500 characters, but right now it feels like there are several hundreds of thousands in common use. And if you want to know how many characters and words I had learned, I do have a record of the unique characters I knew, and there was 1,500, and when it comes to words, it should be something like 2,500. And when I say learned here, it means that I knew how to write them, I could recall their meanings and so on, so if you gave me a vocabulary test, it would work, at least if given enough time. But like I said, I didn't know these well enough to actually use them. And this is clearly reflected in the listening part here, especially. I basically say that I don't understand anything when people talk to me, except for some words here and there, and occasionally a sentence. And this was not because I didn't know the words, I can promise you that. It was probably a little bit of an accent thing. I wasn't used to the way people spoke in Taiwan when I arrived, and that made it harder. But I think mostly it's about not having practiced enough dealing with real-world audio and real-world spoken Chinese. And I don't mean that in the sense that, oh, they used slang, they use everyday expressions. No, I simply mean that I hadn't done lots of meaning-focused input. I had not listened to hours and hours of fairly easy audio trying to figure out what people say, what it means. I had mostly just focused on the textbook, and that does not give you the variety, and it is not enough in terms of input. That was the big problem for me. And in a way, this sounds a little bit depressing, right? I studied full-time for not a year really, more like 9 months. And then I moved to Taiwan, and I couldn't really understand what people said, and well, they could understand me, but that was a little bit limited because, well, my vocabulary was limited and I couldn't talk about that many different things. On the other hand, I've seen this being repeated many, many times by many, many students, and that is because the curricula that they follow aren't enough. If the curriculum specifies that you're supposed to know words in isolation and explain grammar patterns and maybe do some reading, that is what students will do. So you can have someone, like me for example, who nails almost every exam, and still you get this after 1 year, you can't really do that much with the language. And if we compare this to someone with a more informed approach to learning, such as Scott Young, and he wrote a guest post on Hacking Chinese about how to reach a decent level of Chinese in 100 days, the difference is that he was actually able to speak with me after 100 days, and also he passed HSK4 after 100 days. And well, he studied much more per day than I did during my first year, but he also did lots of other things that I didn't do. I spent too much time in my textbook and with vocabulary and flashcards, and too little time actually interacting with people or just listening to Chinese that wasn't from the textbook. Another important difference is, of course, that I lived in Sweden during my first year, so outside the classroom there was no Chinese, and any opportunity to learn would have to be one that I created myself. And back then, I did not know what I know now about learning languages, I wasn't committed that much, to be honest, and so I squandered this opportunity to learn. Well, I could have learned at least twice as much in the first year, easily. As I have pointed out in articles on Hacking Chinese, and I'll put links in the description, where you live does not determine how much you learn. You can learn an awful lot without leaving your home country, and you can also go to China and learn nothing. It's all about what you do with the time. It is true that it's easier to create an immersion environment if you're already in one. You just need to open the window or go outside and you will hear Chinese. Whereas if you're in your home country, you will have to create these opportunities to learn on your own. I didn't do these things, so my exposure to Chinese was way too low during the first year. So if I were to give you some advice, and this is something I've written about many times, so long-time listeners and readers will not be surprised, but it's very important that you don't confuse somebody else's goals for learning Chinese with your own. If your course requires you to memorize vocabulary, grammar patterns, and do lots of reading, and that's what you do, That doesn't necessarily mean that your Chinese is awesome or you will be able to speak with Chinese people. Those are completely different skills. If you want to get good at speaking with people, well, obviously, to begin with, you need to do tons of listening. And most university courses simply don't require you to do that. And it doesn't matter how well you know the vocabulary and everything that's written in your textbook, because that's never going to be enough input for you to really be able to deal with these things in varied contexts in real life. The earlier you realize this, the better, and for me it took almost a year. And so if you are in a course right now, you need to be mindful of this. If your goal is to pass the course, well, of course, look at the curriculum and do those things. Look at the test and make sure that you prepare for it. But if you want to be able to use Chinese and communicate with real people, it doesn't matter what it says in your curriculum. And you should be aware that most curricula are not constructed in a way that they require students to be good at actually using the language. I know this sounds outrageous, but it is definitely true. As you might have noticed, I feel rather passionately about these things, and I think that many people would learn much more Chinese if they realized these things much earlier, which is, of course, one of the reasons I started Hacking Chinese a few years later. I had accumulated many things during my first year in Sweden, my first year in Taiwan, that I felt were very interesting and valuable, and I wanted to share these things with other students so they didn't have to take the long way around as I did. So in no way am I claiming that the start I had to my Chinese learning journey was optimal. I did learn lots of things, I was inspired by my teachers, and I generally speaking liked learning Chinese. And of course I continued learning Chinese, so that was successful. But I could have learned so much more if I knew what I know now about learning languages. Fortunately, that did not deter me, and I kept learning Chinese, and that's of course what we will cover in the next episode in this series, which will likely be in early March. As a segue to that episode, and as a way of concluding this episode, I should talk a little bit about why I kept learning, because like I said last time, I didn't really intend this 1 year to be the beginning of a long journey. I just wanted to spend 1 year seeing what this was like. And it wasn't really the case that I said, oh yeah, I want to study Chinese for the rest of my life during my first semester. That's simply not how it happened. Instead, this was rather a coincidence, because one of my teachers forwarded an email that he had received about a scholarship to go to Taiwan to study Chinese for 1 year, the Huayu Enrichment Scholarship. And I didn't take this very seriously. I did put together an application that took me maybe 20 minutes to do, and I sent it in. It was even incomplete because I had misunderstood how to apply for universities and so on. I thought that was something you could do after you got the scholarship, but it turned out you had to do it before. But that was fixable, so I got this scholarship, and once I had the scholarship, I realized that of course I can't back out now. I mean, this is an opportunity I only will get once, and I decided to take it. But if I hadn't received that scholarship, or if my teacher hadn't forwarded that message, I would never have applied, and I would very likely have stopped my Chinese learning after that first year. But I did get the scholarship, and I did go to Taiwan, and I kept learning Chinese, which I will talk about in the next part in this series.
Thank you for tuning in to the Hacking Chinese podcast. If you like this episode, please share it. More information and inspiration about learning and teaching Chinese can be found at hackingchinese.com. See you in the next episode, and until then, good luck with your studies.